They say you gotta lose a couple fights to win. It's hard to
tell from where I'm sitting. Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, The Independent, NewYorkTimes.com, ClassicRock.about.com, RollingStone.com, and Entertainment Weekly. Take your business to the big time. I bought a ticket there on. This opening number, Slight Figure of Speech, brought to us by the Avett Brothers. We'll be hearing more about and from the Avett Brothers. But first, these trivia questions. What did you expect? What did you forget? Our trivia questions come to us once again from TriviaPlane.com. Question number one, which film revived the 1970s song, You Sexy Thing? Second question, in which U.S. state did Kurt Cobain die? The answers to these two trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. In the transition section of today's program, we see these entries from BGORecords.com. Today in rock history, and this weekend is the weekend of July 2nd through the 4th. What were the number one hits in rock history this weekend? Well, back in 1958, it was the Everly Brothers with All I Have to Do is Dream. And a year later in 59, it was Bobby Darin with Dream Lover. Back in 1964, it was the Beach Boys with I Get Around. And back in 1988, Tracy Chapman. Births this weekend in rock history? Well, if you were born on any one of these days, July 2nd through the 4th, you share a close birthday, if not an exact birthday, with Louis Armstrong. What a wonderful world. He was born on the 4th of July back in 1900. Bill Withers, born on the 4th of July in 1938. Lovely day. Paul Williams of the Temptations, born on the 2nd of July 1939. Matthew Fisher from Poco Harum, 3rd of July 1946. Paul Barrera, Little Feet, 3rd of July 1948. Jeremy Spencer of Fleetwood Mac on the 4th of July, 1948. Laura Branigan on the 3rd of July, 1957. And finally, Kevin Hearn, Bare Naked Ladies, 3rd of July, 1969. Deaths this weekend in rock history, well, back in 1969, on the 3rd of July, it was Brian Jones from the Rolling Stones. And also, on the 3rd of July, 2 years later, 1971, Jim Morrison of The Doors. Miscellany in rock history. Well, back this weekend in 56, it was Elvis Presley recording Hound Dog, Don't Be Cruel in New York. And also in 1956, this weekend, following Elvis Presley's appearance on The Steve Allen Show the previous night, U.S. TV critic John Crosby refers to him as an unspeakable, untalented, and vulgar young entertainer. Well, back in 1969 this weekend, it was the first and only time rock performers appear at Newport Jazz Festival with Led Zeppelin, Jeff Beck, Jethro Tull, and others. Atlanta Pop Festival opens with Creedence Clearwater Revival back in 69. Delaney and Bonnie, Canned Heat, 40,000 attend. And back in 1971 this weekend, it was The Doors hitting the U.S. chart with Riders on the Storm. Back in 1990 this weekend, it was representatives of the Italian Catholic Church angry about Madonna's alleged inappropriate use of crucifixes and sacred symbols succeed in their attempt to halt all of her concerts in Rome. Back in 1991, a year later this weekend, Guns N' Roses lead singer Axl Rose jumps off the stage and attacks a fan who was videotaping a concert outside of St. Louis. In the ensuing riot, 60 people are hurt, and the venue is wrecked. And finally, back in 1995 this weekend, Courtney Love's request to spread the ashes of late husband Kurt Cobain is turned down by Lakeview Cemetery in Seattle. This final Transitions article just came out, published by Ken Ritter of the Associated Press on the 28th of June, 2010. Vince Neil arrested on DUI charge in Las Vegas. Motley Crue singer Vince Neil, who last week had declared his sobriety, was arrested on drunken driving charges after getting pulled over by police in his Lamborghini near the Las Vegas Strip. The 49-year-old rocker was taken into custody about 11:15 p.m. Sunday when he was stopped in the black sports car after leaving the Las Vegas Hilton Hotel. Neil was released Monday after posting $2,000 bail. Article skips down. Neil is the frontman for a four-member heavy metal band known for its bad behavior, hard partying, famous girlfriends, and hits like Girls, Girls, Girls and Dr. Feelgood. He said last week that he was sober and that there are other things in life than just drugs and alcohol. Neil and his fourth wife, Leah, live in Las Vegas, where Neil owns tattoo shops, a bar called Feelgood's Rock Bar and Grill, and the Vince Neil Tres Rios Cantina at the Las Vegas Hilton. He recently released a solo album, Tattoos and Tequila, covering 1970s rock songs and a rendition of Elvis Presley's Viva Las Vegas. In an interview last week with the Associated Press about a tell-all book due out in September, Neil said he hadn't used drugs in 20 years and had stopped abusing alcohol. "There's just a point in your life where you kind of stop. That's what happened with me," Neil had said. "There's other things in life than just rock, drugs, and alcohol." Neil said he admired the sobriety of top performers today. "Those are the guys that are doing it right," he said. "It's the ones that self-destruct with the drugs and alcohol that have gone by the wayside many years ago." The arrest was not Neil's first drunken driving case. In 1984, he crashed a sports car head-on into another car in Redondo Beach, California, killing his passenger, Nicholas Dingley, a 24-year-old drummer with the group Hanoi Rocks. Neil, then 25, wasn't injured. He later pleaded guilty to manslaughter and drunken driving, served 20 days in jail, and agreed to pay $2.5 million in restitution to the victims. Neil also has had misdemeanor battery charges dismissed at least twice in California and Nevada after performing community service. This next article is from David Menconi, News and Observer, published on June 25, 2010. Has-been Patterson has his day. Pat Patterson describes himself as a world-famous has-been, but he has achieved airwave immortality nevertheless. Patterson was recently inducted into the North Carolina Association of Broadcasters Hall of Fame on his fourth try. "Yeah, I've been nominated three other times and I didn't get in," Patterson says, "so I figured it would be posthumous, if at all. But 55 years of broadcasting, I got a pat on the back, a warm handshake, and a plaque." Long a fixture on local airwaves, Patterson has spent 40 of his 55 years in radio in the Triangle. He served as morning disc jockey on Top 40 station, WKIX 850 AM, working alongside Rick Dees, Charlie Brown, and John Tesh. Rick Dees, by the way, presented Patterson with his Hall of Fame award at the ceremony at Asheville's Biltmore Inn. He also handled the morning drive time shift for WQDR FM during that station's days as an album rock pioneer during the late 1970s. Patterson is currently between stations, but he should resurface soon on WKIX. That station was recently revived as a Pop's Oldies station, which means Patterson will be airing a lot of the songs he played on WKIX back in the day. "It will probably be a weekend shift, which is fine by me," he says. "At my age, it's hard to get on the air at all anymore. I'm 74, but a young 74. In technology rock news, we see the following article, "You the DJ," by Sasha Frere Jones. No one knows what the future of the music business will look like, but the near future of listening to music looks a lot like 1960. People will listen for free to music that comes out of a stationary box that sits indoors. They'll listen to music that comes from an object that fits in the hand, and they'll listen to music in the car. That box was once a radio or a stereo. Now it's a computer. That handheld device that was once a plastic AM radio is now likely to be a smartphone. The car, still a car, though its stereo now plays satellite music and MP3s. But behind the similarities is a series of subtle shifts in software and portability that may relocate the experience of listening, even if nobody has come close to replacing the concept of the radio DJ, whose job lingers as a template for much software. Of the 20 hours a week that an average American spends listening to music, only 3 of it is stuff you own. The rest is radio, Tim Westergren told me. Westergren is the founder of Pandora, one of several firms that have bought the radio model to the Internet. Pandora offers free streaming music, not so different from the radio stations that many people grew up with, except that the DJ is you, more or less. The company does not sell music like normal radio. Internet radio is considered a promotional tool for recordings, even though the fees that it pays to labels are currently higher than those paid by terrestrial stations. If you go to Pandora on the web or on a phone, you begin by picking a song or an artist, which then establishes a station. Pandora's proprietary algorithm, in which a panel of musicians assesses about 400 variables, like bravado level in vocals and piano style for each song, leads you from what you chose to a song that seems to fit with it musically. You also have the option to teach the algorithm by giving a song a thumbs up or thumbs down. The company has captured a very large chunk of the Internet radio audience. The service now has 50 million users who listen an average of more than 11 hours a month. The Pandora experience isn't much like being guided by a DJ on a radio station, at least not yet. That delicious unpredictability is now approximated by the thousands of mixtapes and podcasts that are released by individuals on the web free of charge every day. I started my station with Public Image LTD's Pop Tones, a 1979 song that is loaded with bass, dissonant guitar, and the sinus bray of John Lydon, once known as Johnny Rotten. The band's sound is deeply indebted to reggae. The original bassist was named Ja Wobble, but I couldn't make a reggae song appear on my Pop Tones station. I did get lots of bands I like, the Minutemen, The Birthday Party, and Fugazi, who all make aggressive music that, like Public Images, is heavy on articulate rhythm and acid guitar. After skipping 6 songs, I received this message on my iPhone app. Sorry, our music licenses force us to limit the number of songs you may skip. Pandora is acting like a radio station, not like a replacement for a potential sale. You can't keep skipping until it plays what you want. On a recent car trip I took through Florida, Pandora was perfect. I plugged in my phone, hit a couple of buttons, and was rewarded with 90 minutes of instrumental hip-hop. The article skips down. The broadcast and on-demand models are governed by different rules, but they share one important feature. Neither depends on downloading files or finding storage space on a personal computer. Lurking behind these models are two enormous companies that will likely change the landscape of online audio in a matter of months, Google and Apple. The article skips down. An album collection is no longer relevant for many listeners. Limited only by the number of songs offered by any service, MOG offers nearly 8 million. They can create as many playlists as they like and access them from almost any device. Whoever comes up with the most powerful and elegant version of the streaming model will have a very big portal. If iTunes becomes a dominant radio force, it could control an overwhelming portion of the music business. Google owns YouTube, which already serves as a sort of ad hoc radio station for many young people. If Google's streaming service works well with its Android applications and creates a music bundling system, it too could take over a large share of the market. While using these services, I kept thinking about an early 80s drum machine called the Roland TR-808, which has seduced generations of musicians with its heavy kick drum sound and the oddly human swing of its clock. Whoever programmed this box had more impact on dance music than the hundreds of better-known musicians who use the device. Similarly, the anonymous programmers who write the algorithms that control the series of songs in these streaming services may end up having a huge effect on the way that people think of musical narrative, what follows what, and who sounds best with whom. Sometimes we will be the DJs, and sometimes the machines will be, and we may be surprised by which we prefer. Once again, this article appeared in the New Yorker, June 21, 2010. So, what do you know about this group that opened today's program? And we'll close it as well. The Avett Brothers. Well, this biography is provided by Mark Deming, All Music Guide 2010. The Avett Brothers' music has roots in traditional folk and bluegrass, but also captures the high spirits and no-boundaries attitude of rock and roll, which is appropriate since rock is where Scott Avett and Seth Avett first cut their teeth as musicians. Although siblings Scott, vocals and banjo, and Seth, vocals and guitar, began making music together as children, their group's genesis began when they were members of a rock band called Nemo, which gigged regularly in Greenville, North Carolina. Looking for another outlet for their musical ideas, the Avetts began getting together with like-minded friends, most notably Nemo guitarist John Twomey, on Tuesdays for acoustic guitar polls, where they'd share a few drinks and swap songs. As time passed, the weekly get-together, which was called the Backdoor Project, or Nemo Downstairs, became a semi-public event, with the pickers busking for the enjoyment of passers-by, and Seth and Scott felt the new acoustic music they were making was as fun and satisfying as their rock band. Twomey and the Avetts decided to document their side project in 2000, and the Backdoor Project was renamed the Avett Brothers, with the release of a self-titled album that same year. Nemo broke up before 2000 came to a close, and Seth and Scott decided to make the Avett Brothers their new priority. They amicably parted ways with Twomey and added upright bassist and vocalist Bob Crawford to the combo. After a few months of playing live shows, the new trio recorded its second album, 2002's Country Was. The Avett Brothers hit the road upon the album's release that summer and used the opportunity to break in material for their next studio project, A Carolina Jimblee, which was released in 2003. Over the next several years, the Avett Brothers maintained a busy and prolific schedule. They released a lengthy and ambitious studio album in 2004, another live disc in 2005, and both a full-length album and an EP in 2006, all recorded during breaks in the group's heavy touring calendar. In 2007, the Avett Brothers reached a new level of popularity with Emotionalism, their first album to make a dent on the Billboard charts. Rick Rubin took notice and signed the band to American Recordings, his own division of Sony BMG Columbia, during the summer of 2008. The Glam 2, issued just several months after, was the Avett Brothers' last release on the Ramsour label, while 2009's I and Love and You served as their major label debut. Speaking of which, Kim Rule in About.com Guide gives 4 out of 5 stars to that album, I and Love and You, which came out on September 29, 2009. She writes, "The Avett Brothers are a good band. They pull from so many different styles of music, integrating elements of pop and country, bluegrass and rock into their music. Their live shows are hugely energetic community bounce fests as the brothers strike a quick connection with the audience. All that energy is difficult to translate to a recording, but the Avetts have managed to do just that with every disc they've released. I and Love and You is a more polished, earnest departure. For the most part, it even works." polishing coal. I and Love and You is decidedly more mainstream-friendly than the Avett Brothers' previous records. This is not necessarily a bad thing. The Avetts rose to their current level of success by being delightfully and charmingly unpolished. There has always been a level of dusty honesty in their work, a sense that these were great artists, unconcerned with making themselves palatable to the mainstream. As their career has blossomed, however, they have done just that, not through any artifice or intentional design. It's just a thing that happens, perhaps because they've become more familiar with their own capabilities as artists. No doubt, I and Love and You will reach a new, wider audience than the band's previous discs have managed. Highlights of I and Love and You. Unquestionably, the best moment on this disc is album opener and title track, I and Love and You. It's a solid personal song about struggling with one's own identity and place in the world. Next is January's Wedding, a terrific little love song. And It Spread is one of several moments on this disc where they seem to be channeling the Beatles. Here, the recording captures that raw, live energy the Avetts bring so well to the stage, departing from the introspection which so colors the beginnings of the disc. The Perfect Space is second only to the title track as a standout tune. It does so well what the band does best, following the song rather than any particular mood they're trying to convey or any specific style. The bottom line. Longtime Avett Brothers fans may notice a clear difference between I and Love and You and the band's previous records, but it's not likely to be enough to turn them off. In fact, this is a very good record and sees the band making some of the best music they've yet to record. That it comes in more lush arrangements, a more polished aesthetic, and somewhat more pop-oriented tunes is overshadowed by the fact that each listen reveals new levels of artistry. So let's take a listen to some snippets from this same album and the Avett Brothers, Quick Drum Heart. And we'll start off with that, and then we'll go to Laundry Room, and then Tin Man. Snippet from Laundry Room.
Don't push me out just a little longer. Stole your mother. Disregard your father's words. Close the laundry door.
And now a snippet from Tin Man.
You can't be like me. Be happy that you can't. I see pain, but I don't feel it. I am like the old tin man. I'm as warm as a stone. I keep it steady as I can. I see pain, but I don't feel it. I am like the old tin man. I miss it.
The Avett Brothers will close out today's program with their song 10,000 Words. This next article was published on the 2nd of July, 2010, Entertainment Weekly. Jane Lynch, Glee Super Aggro Gym Coach, fills us in on a few of her current musical favorites. What? No Physical? This article is written by Tim Stack. Jack Johnson. I love guitar, and he plays a mean guitar. He has an amazing voice, and I love his lyrics. He's just got a style I love. Nina Simone. I love her voice. Where's her voice is, it's almost where a man would sing. She's very mellow, but Nina almost sounds like she's screaming sometimes in desperation and passion. There's a strength to it. Anita Kerr. In the 60s and 70s, she did what you might hear at first to be elevator music. She did pop songs that are beautifully vocally arranged. Joni Mitchell. I have everything of hers, but I think Blue is probably my favorite. Cesaria Evora. She's another one of those women who you hear at first and think, is that a man? You're not sure. It's just a deep, soulful woman. Wonder what that says about me. This next article is by Dave White, classicrock.about.com, famous DJs, published on the 8th of July, 28. In his introduction to Jim Ladd's book, Radio Waves, Don Henley wrote, "Music changed my life. Radio, the vehicle for that music, was my connection to the world that lay outside my small hometown. It was a friend in the dark, a messenger to a lover, a magic carpet, a ticket out." And this is our tribute to rock radio of the 60s and 70s and the people who made it what it was. From the Boston area, WRKO, the Big 68 rocked Beantown from 67 to 81. Today, the station has a talk format, but it pioneered the fast-paced, high-energy sound that mirrored much of rock music in the 70s. From Buffalo, WKBW. When that went on the air in 26, the call letter stood for well-known Bible witness. But in the 60s and 70s, KB listeners worshipped at the altar of rock and roll. With 50,000 watts of power, the station's signal could be heard at night throughout most of the eastern part of the country. Among the notable personalities during KB's rock era was Big Jack Armstrong, who was listed in the Guinness Book of World Records in 1971 as the world's fastest talking human. From Charleston, South Carolina, WTMA. During rock radio's golden age, mighty TMA was listened to by more people than any other station in the Southeast, including those in the larger markets like Atlanta. From the late 60s through the 70s, one of the most popular TMA DJs was Booby Nash, whose name lent itself to a variety of memorable promotions that included lapel pins that proudly proclaimed, "I'm a booby lover." Today, WTMA is a news talk station. From Chicago, WLS. It was the Sears Roebuck department store that put WLS on the air in the early 1920s, so the call letters originally stood for World's Largest Store. By the early 70s, Music Radio 89 was making household names of personality like Gary Gears, Larry Lujack, who later defected to WCFL, and John Records Landecker. Today, WLS is a talk station. WLS had the rock audience all to itself until 65, when Super CFL, WCFL, adopted the format and countered with memorable personalities like Dick Biondi. WCFL rocked until 1976. So how'd you do on the trivia questions? Which film revived the 70s songs, "You Sexy Thing"? That was The Full Monty. And in which U.S. state did Kurt Cobain die? That was the state of Washington. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until... I wrote or read them all, went searching in the swarm, still can't find how to hold my hands. I know you need me in the next room over, but I am stuck in here all paralyzed. Next time.